Just a quick check. This afternoon's talk is Hazard Assessment, New Tools for Busy Brewers. So if that's not the talk you intended to see, you may be in the wrong room, but I encourage you to stay anyway, because this topic is timely and important, I do believe. So I'm Larry Horowitz from Four String Brewing Company. I am your at-large Brewers Association Board of Directors member, and I also currently sit at the head of the Safety Committee, formerly chaired by Mr. Stinchfield, who's going to speak with us today. Just a couple pieces of housekeeping. The app is wonderful, and I hope you've been enjoying it throughout the conference. There are a quick three-question survey at the end of it. I encourage you to please rate the talk and rate your experience, and it helps us to continue having programming that is meaningful and important to you as members. So let's talk about Matt. Matt Stinchfield has been actively engaged in environmental health and safety for 35 years, including industrial safety, environmental monitoring and pollution control, and behavioral safety program development. He has focused on brewery safety for more than 20 years, serving as the Brewers Association Safety Ambassador for the past 3 years. Please join me in welcoming Matt Stinchfield.
Thank you, Larry. Hey, listen, we're going to keep this kind of informal today, and midway through, it's going to get even more conversational. So if you don't mind, I'll just speak from down here. I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, giving birth to a watermelon. It's probably not a politically correct expression, but that's what it was like in the safety subcommittee, working on the development of a very important new tool that I'm going to reveal to you today, a hazard assessment best management practice guide. But let me take you through probably, you know, if you had one tool in your toolbox, what would it be? Would it be vice grips? You know, I mean, what's a multi-tool that you keep on your belt? I don't know, something like that, right? Hazard assessment is that multi-tool. And it's the way of looking at, and I hope I can screw your heads in the right direction today. It's a way of looking at any job that you're doing in the brewery, and you can extend it to your weekend activities, you can extend it to any job that's not in the brewery. It's often known by the name job hazard assessment, hazard analysis, various things. We're going to call it hazard assessment. And basically, it's a simplified process. It's a logical process, just like so many other things that we do in the brewery, which are based in a sort of a systematic framework. You know, you think about quality, you think about sanitation, right? You know, you can sanitize any kind of a vessel by the common principles of sanitation, which you know and love. Well, hazard assessment is that sort of a utilitarian tool that works for looking at any job that you might do in the brewery and figuring out how to do it better and safer. And safer and better are practically have an equal sign between the two of them. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to start with a few general ideas. I think I am. Let's see what happens here. I might need to do it up from up here. And I'm going to use the stairs instead of jump up on the stage. Right? You're not going to have trust in me if I don't do it the right way. Okay, here we go. So, hazard assessment, when you find yourself asking the question, what can go wrong, hazard assessment is the procedure for getting the answer to that. And you're going to see more of this placard here, and I don't want you to leave today without coming up here and getting one of these or more to take home and put on your office wall, stick them on your laboratory door, make sure everybody in your operation knows it and uses it. Well, obviously, we'd like to reduce or eliminate safety problems in the business because they relate to injuries, they relate to loss of quality issues, and you know, and there's probably some cost issues that come with injuries, as well as the idea, you know, if you're trying to be more positive than negative, the cup is half full, not half empty. I'd say what safety is really about is about creating an opportunity for well-being in the workplace, right? I used to do some really, really hazardous jobs. I cleaned up truck rollovers of nasty chemicals and things like that. The radioactive expanding man who thought he would treat his own gout with some uranium ore that he ground up and ultimately found himself injecting it into his body until he died, and then was left in a hot desert home for a few days, and then, you know, you've seen roadkill, so you get the idea. You know, brewing, it shouldn't be unsafe, but it is. We have these things that come with it. I want to start by showing you this little clip, and I want you to think about the guy on the left in the orange tunic as being the brewer, and the guy in the right as being the owner, and hopefully we'll get the sound when we do this.
Are you coming down into the pit?
Wesley's got his strength back. I'm starting him on the machine tonight.
Tyrone, you know how much I love watching you work. But I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan, my wedding to arrange, my wife to murder, and Gilda to frame for it. I'm swamped.
Get some rest. If you haven't got your health, you haven't got anything.
If you haven't got your health, you haven't got anything. That's my real mission for today, and a great reminder. So listen, we're going to start with just a few terms that so I don't lose you on the way. I always like to start out with a definition of safety. And one of the best definitions for safety I ever found came from the Department of Defense, which is not the least ironic that they're putting people in front of, you know, live ammunition. But their definition for safety is freedom from occupational illness, injury, environmental damage, or damage to property and equipment. I like the idea that the DoD framed safety in terms of freedom. Freedom's a positive attribute, just like quality and some other things that we hold near and dear to our hearts. So the idea here, I've just broken it down, the real simple form here is it's freedom from hazards in the workplace. I want to put safety in the context of freedom because, and as we'll come back, when I come back to number 3.4, you'll see it later on. The idea that safety is a positive attribute, and this is what we should be going for. You know, I think what unnerves us is safety's kind of complicated and mysterious, and we don't know what to do, and we have enough stuff to do in our day-to-day life that we don't really know how to implement it. And that's what the hazard assessment talk today is about. We achieve safety by thoughtfully looking at a task and saying, what could go wrong in terms of my health and well-being, right? What could take away my freedom of wellness? And then once we identify those things, we can solve them. Every kind of hazard in the workplace has multiple solutions. Some of them are free. Some of them require a piece of equipment. Sometimes that piece of equipment's expensive, but often not. And once we say, this is the task, this is the stuff that can go wrong, this is how I'm going to do the job so that those things don't go wrong on my clock. That's the idea. That's the whole basis of hazard assessment. It's a very logical problem-solving process. Here's what could happen. I'm going to open my mind to think about even if it's a very perverse, you know, a low probability event, I'm going to think about that because oftentimes what hurts us in the workplace are the low probability events. They have high consequences, but they're rare. And because they're rare, we tend to ignore them or we tend to say, that won't happen to me. But the day it does happen to you, that sucks. And so that's what hazard assessment allows us to do, is to thoughtfully consider the steps of a job and then, you know, counteract what could go wrong. Here's the four steps, and I'm going to hit this several times during the talk today. And it's also it's summarized on the card up here. Outline the steps in a task. First, I walk into a room. Then I fill a tank with hot water. Then I turn on the heater so that it's 170 degrees. Then I add 4,000 milliliters of caustic solution. Right? Blah, 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 blah. The steps in the task. And then you say, what could go wrong when I've got 170-degree water? Well, let's see, there's an electrical heater, there are cords involved. I could electrocute myself in a wet environment if I don't have the right wiring. I could trip over the cord. I could get scalded by 170-degree water. It's not rocket science. This is the idea behind hazard assessment. It's just looking at the job and saying, right now, at this part of it, what could screw me up? Scalding hot water, electrical safety issues, and housekeeping tripping on the cord. And then we go to the next thing, and we say, okay, now I've got 4,000 milliliters of concentrated caustic. What could go wrong? Let's make a list, you know. Plenty of things. And we're going to go all the way through this process, hands-on. And then we identify what it is that we're going to do to reduce the opportunity for that problem to get to us personally, or to our coworkers, or ultimately to equipment and the environment as well. And when we've got this better view of how to do the job, we rewrite our SOP. And now the SOP has things in it, like, you know, cautiously walk across the brewery with the beaker of caustic. When the way, you know, you don't pump it like this, you know, it's like, take your time. Don't splash it. Avoid splashing, okay? That's the kind of thing we're talking about. And you build it into the instructional component of an SOP, and now you've done a whole bunch of cool stuff. You have a really awesome procedure. It incorporates safety. It codifies your company's safety culture. And when you have a new employee or somebody who's new in that department, you can take them through and say, this is how we do it. And then over time, somebody says, you know, I like how you do it. We could do it this way. It might be a little bit safer. Then you modify the SOP. Kaizen, continuous improvement. This is how it happens. But it doesn't happen by just worrying about safety and not taking charge of it by doing hazard assessment. There are two kinds of hazard controls that we're going to talk about, and they fall into, you know, there are two basic categories, prevention and protection. So for just a minute, how many of you know all about safe sex? That's good. That, you know, I was in another state. I can't mention it right now, but no hands went up. I'm like, dude, I'm not doing Tinder in your state. Here's the thing. I'm going to use this as an example. We could use car safety, but that's boring. So let's talk about sex. There's prevention. Like, what are the hazards of sex? What are you concerned about? Any ideas? What makes you nervous?
STDs.
The STDs, right? Sexually transmitted diseases, or not so much for the guys in the room, but the women, pregnancy. Those are the two hazards of having sex, if sex has hazards, right? And so we can think about, well, how do we prevent that? Well, we prevent it in the absolute by abstinence, by don't engage in it. Well, that's great. You know, you might go, well, I don't want to use caustic in my brewery, so I'm going to find something that's not like as corrosive as caustic. You know, good luck. We're kind of stuck with that. That's a really good product. It's marginally inexpensive, and it does a great job. But it comes with the problem. So just like if we decide, well, abstinence isn't for me, I'm going to still engage in the act. Now what do I do to be safe? Protection, PPE, exactly right, okay? You don't need me to spell this out anymore, do you? You're with me. Okay, because, you know, I can take it all the way to the depths of embarrassment if I have to. But let's just say that the best way to not get an STD or to have an unwanted pregnancy, the two hazards of sex, are a combination of procedural things. Again, how much do I want to say? There are ways of having sex that are less dangerous than other ways. Phone sex, for example, right? Can't get the STD that way. Okay, but maybe you go, that's not quite fulfilling my purpose. Yeah, I'm always wordsmithing this because, you know, anyways. You know, what you want are some safe work practices, although sex shouldn't be work, right? For some people it is, I get it. Especially, you know, when you reach my age. But look, we're trying to find this combination of procedural or conceptual ideas that make it safer for us, and also some equipment-related solutions, right? So the unwanted pregnancy might be dealt with a birth control method, some sort of product, an administrative or engineering control, as we would call it. And the STD might be managed by the use of a condom or the phone sex, as I alluded to, something like that. So, you know, you find what works for you, and you're going to find that the best solution is a combination of ideas. You don't want to just rely on one thing because, you know, probably some amongst us here were accidents. And our parents thought they weren't going to have a kid, but they still had a kid. So, you know, accidents happen, but mostly those accidents are due to reliance on a single solution rather than a combination of solutions. All right, enough of the nasty talk. Let me just show you that prevention in general is our highly preferred option because it avoids the hazard or it stops the hazard from being created. The hazard does not exist. If I didn't have to use caustic, you know, if I could use Dawn dishwashing soap, I would not have the hazards of caustic. I would not be worried about my eye safety. Prevention. Substitution of product is one. Finding a way, you know, CIP is the great prevention, right? Nobody climbs in a fermenter, right? Nobody climbs in a fermenter, right? Right? Okay. Nobody's climbing in a fermenter because we have CIP. CIP system is a preventative technology so that we don't have to be exposed to the more dangerous idea of going inside a fermenter where, you know, there are untold hazards. But sometimes we have to work with the caustic. Sometimes we have to have a CO2 atmosphere which is asphyxiating. It's part of what we do. So we look at protection as a way of minimizing the exposure we get. The classic example in auto safety protection is a safety belt, right? It doesn't stop you from driving like an ass. It doesn't stop the other guy from careening into you. But it might help you if those things happen. So the hazard still exists, but you're maybe a little bit better off because you had the seatbelt on. So those are the two themes we're going to talk about, and we're going to see more of these. I told you I'm going to reiterate here. So we take a job and we break it down into steps. This is the example that's in your notes today is the CIP cleaning of a vessel. And we're not even going to look at those slides. They're here for your future reference. We're going to do this differently when we get to that point. But I want to say, you know, look at the task and break it down into some very simple steps. 5-10 steps, you know, whatever the job is. Look at the hazards that exist at each one of those steps. Once you've identified the hazard, you're able to say, all right, I'm going to deal with this hazard in these ways, and you're going to probably use multiple solutions. And then the last thing, I'm going to be optimistic here. You all have SOPs for these jobs in the brewery, right? You already have written procedures for the way you do things. And if not, this is a great excuse to do it. You're then going to go back to that SOP and you're going to review it and you're going to say, okay, now how do I incorporate these safety solutions that I came up with that reduce the hazards for me in that instructional format of the SOP? And now I've got a tool that adds consistency to my entire brewing operation. I've got a thing that I can give to the new guy, gal, and say, hey, this is how we do CIP cleaning of a tank. Why don't you check this out? Then I'm going to have you shadow this individual for a day, and then we're going to be ready to do a run-through with you. That's procedural quality. Quality and safety are hand in hand. They're like brothers. And what I found, and it's anecdotal, but the breweries with the great housekeeping, with the spick and span, you know, cold cooler without black mold growing on the walls, those kind of places, they usually make good beer. Right? I mean, there's something that mentally, the idea of safety is like a quality idea. So if you're keen on quality, just to know safety is like that. And what about the brand identity of your brewery? You know, we're like, we're called Balls to the Wall Brewery. You know, we're crazy. We're Indy 500 Brewery. That's super. Having a safety culture and having a quality culture as well, that does not circumvent the idea that you can't have an edgy brand. You absolutely can have an edgy brand. And the reason that you extol safety with your coworkers is because we won't have the brand if you're not here doing what you do so well. And you're not going to be here if you get hurt. So we love you, man. That's the idea. Safety is love. I'm going to give you a little more detail here on the four steps. So start by outlining the task. First we do this, then we do that, then we do this, then we put that thing away, and then we get the other thing out. Whatever, right? A simple little list. If you already have an SOP, you're going to have more detail than that already on hand. If you don't, you can save the SOP till later. That's 1.1, the instructional level. That's the SOP. Here's the recipe for exactly how we do this job. And if you want to put that off till later, you can. You're going to do it some point. You can do it now if you have it, or you can come back to it. But the very first thing you have to do is just outline the task. And then identify the hazards for each step of the task. Again, there's a way you can drill down here, and I'm going to finish up today telling you about how you can numerically rank the hazards. Right? Because the first thing you do when you do an SOP and you look at a single job and you go, oh, there are 12 hazards. Oh, my God, we're going to have those for every, you know, and you could get overwhelmed. But what you do is you go, well, the electrocution one, that's the bugger, you know. Slipping on a cord, walking in a wet spot, yeah, somebody could get hurt. Electrocution, somebody gets fried. I'm gonna worry about that one. I'm going to especially focus on that one. Or asphyxiation with CO2, right? Or going in a mash tun and not locking out the mash rakes, and somebody else comes on a tour and goes, yeah, see how this goes around, and flips on the switch. And you become hamburger, right? So you get to look, you know, it's up to you. You can chew it away little bit by little bit. And we've got a numerical way of ranking those hazards if you want. The third thing is you figure out the hazards and then you identify any one of these four things. I'm going to go a little bit of a deep dive right now, and I'm going to take you through each of these four concepts. Some are more preventative, some are more protective. Engineering controls. This is the stuff. These are the pieces of equipment and so forth that we use to make life safer. Right, so here's a pneumatic keg lifter, right? Half barrel keg full of beer, 165 pounds. That guy doesn't weigh 165 pounds, you know? And so it's an expensive piece of equipment, but what's a back worth? So, you know, this is what when we think about engineering controls, we like to think about both the kinetic and the potential energy. Kinetic energy is stuff that's in motion. Potential energy is the stuff that could come into motion. So you got pallets six high with kegs on it in your warehouse, and you don't use any strapping. And who's the lowest guy on the totem pole? The material handling guy on the forklift, right? Is he trained? Is he conscious? Is he paying attention? Why aren't you strapping or saran wrapping your kegs on a pallet? You've got them six high. That's a fatality waiting to happen. No hard hat will help you in this situation. So you look at that and you go, well, you know, we stack the kegs up there before they get clean. You know, they come back from our distributor and they, you know, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, now you've identified a hazard. You solve it the way you want to. OSHA, by the way, OSHA is very much more liberal than you think. If you identify the hazard and you say, this is how we're going to resolve it, with saran wrap, we're only going to put the three high, we're going to do this or that or the other thing. That's fine. If it solves the problem, your mission, as far as OSHA is concerned, it's a thing called the General Duty Clause. It says the employer will create a safe and healthful workplace, and the employees will do as instructed by their employer to bring out that safe workplace. Right? It's quid pro quo. This tit for tat. It's not just the employer, it's also the employee. So let's look at a few examples here. Control of energy, right? You've heard about lockout, tagout. Well, electrical energy can be very hazardous. We've got 240, three-phase in a lot of breweries. You've got wet areas, and you got a bunch of cobbled-together electrical work that you should have had a licensed electrician do, but you thought you'd do it yourself. I know, we're chuckling. A guy died last year in our craft industry. Hit 240. Was resuscitated. Died later. Okay? It's a drag. It's a drag when we talk about this stuff, and I'm not going to show you eyeballs hanging from a nerve, but listen, folks, you know what you're working with. It's some pretty powerful stuff. You're working with compressed gases. You're working with mechanical energy. You know, one of the places people get hurt all the time in breweries is in packaging lines. You've got all this moving stuff, and for some reason you think you can't hit the stop button ever, or you can't have an accumulation table when you need one, you know. You look at that stuff. Hydraulic and pneumatic, right? All the gas pressure stuff we've got. Hot temperatures and also cold temperatures. Did you know you can get frostbite in a brewery? Okay? And where can that happen? And so forth. And, of course, chemical energy. So lockout, tagout is the idea of using a physical restraint on some sort of process line or process equipment or wiring that's going to reduce the chance of you getting hit. Control of pressure in a brewery. Absolutely, guys, if you don't have pressure relief mechanisms on every single pressurized vessel in your brewery, go do it. Those guys up in the upper left there cost $110 a piece. It'll save your life. Or a burst disc. And, you know, if you've got house pressure of 175 PSI and it's going to your keg cleaner, put a secondary regulator like the one on the right here and it's dialed down to 60 PSI. So that nothing more than 60 can ever get to that device. Small thing makes all the difference. On a bad day, makes it good. Administrative controls. These are the things that are sort of, that are written or trained into us. In traffic safety, the highway signs that say speed limit 70, whatever, that's an administrative control. All right? The great thing about administrative controls is they give the business owner a chance to say, yes, this is our policy. We have this training manual written down. The bad thing is nobody reads it. Right? So, you know, number one, keep it short and sweet, but do write it down. Signage in the brewery, a chemical label on a drum, a process line that says steam. These are administrative controls. The idea that if you have an open brewery where you've got a pub and you know, people can walk right into the brewery, there's a sign that says, you know, nobody in here unless you're you know, with a staff member, or no access at all. Whatever your rule is, but administrative controls are these sort of written and trained rules that we use. And we have a great BMP that we produced at the Safety Subcommittee on Surviving an OSHA Inspection, which is in effect an administrative control for you. And then another great BMP we have is on personal protective equipment. The thing that people like to think about when they think about safety is the stuff that's visible, right? The blue gloves, the safety glasses, the yellow earplugs, you know, PPE is the most fashionable of all of these things, right? You can even color coordinate if you're clever. The problem is that when PPE fails, the next thing after the PPE is your tissue. I used to see in a safety magazine, I used to see an ad for rubber gloves from some company that, you know, made all kinds of gloves, and they had a hand made out of a sponge. They had a sponge cut into the shape of a hand. And the tagline was, to most chemicals, this is what your hand looks like. You know, and I was like, okay, got it, good one. You know, if you open up a catalog and look for gloves, you'll find 200 kinds of chemical safety gloves. Why is that? Anybody? Why are there 200 kinds? Why isn't there like the one glove? Right, different chemicals. There is no one glove. So even the other problem with PPE is you have to choose the right stuff for what you're working with. It takes a little bit of conscious effort. You got to read the SDS. And it says nitrile glove. And you go, okay, good. I'm not going to use latex. I'm going to use nitrile. I'm not going to use vinyl gloves are crap. Don't ever use vinyl gloves, right? The little food safety gloves, right? They don't work for any chemicals at all. But even the nitrile gloves that we wear, the little stretchy ones that, you know, we throw away, they don't last very well. And so here's some quick examples. I want you to be thinking about what are the hazard controls, what are the solutions to my problem. Eye protection could certainly be one of them. Hand protection, and here I've given you some suggestions on which kind of gloves are most commonly used in the brewery and for which hazards. Foot protection. I love this. You can actually get pink ropers with steel toes now. That's like for the pink boots ladies that are in Texas, I guess. I don't know. But, and things that look like sneakers, but that are actually steel toe protected. Splash protection. So if a chemical could splash on you, how do you avoid getting hurt from it? Well, one thing you can do is you can wear an apron, right? But what about how you handle the chemical? Like consciously, I'm working with this stuff that's really bad. Now, once it's diluted, not so much. But right now, it's pretty hardcore. So I'm going to handle it like it's a hardcore thing. This is not when I'm running through the brewery. I'm like very systematically handling it to be careful. And most brewers don't need respiratory protection. And if you have a job at your brewery which creates some respiratory annoyance, I would urge you to find some kind of an engineering control solution to it. Too many brewers have facial hair, and it's problematic from a respirator standpoint. Plus, the regulatory requirements for, officially, properly wearing respirators are very sophisticated and involve medical testing and all sorts of stuff. And it's expensive, and it means that the hazard is still there in all of its glory. So figure out a way to reduce the hazard. Use ventilation, for example, and you might say, I don't need a respirator because I've got good ventilation. So this is the idea of finding the best solution, and it's all up to you. The last one, which OSHA doesn't really give much credibility to, but I always call it out as a separate thing. They say safe work practices are an administrative control. Safe work practices are common sense. But Voltaire, the old French philosopher, reminds us, common sense is altogether uncommon. So, but the beauty of safe work practices is, as I've got here at the bottom, they're realized by the individual in the moment. So if you think and act in terms of safe work practices, like there's a puddle, I'm going to walk around it, not through it. There's a puddle, I'm going to see where it's coming from. What special equipment did that require? Only the thing between the two ears. It's like the zen of safety are the safe work practices. And when we know that there are hazards in the workplace and we're not dealing with them, does it make us nervous? Does it make us worrisome? Of course. And we carry that worry. And here's a quote I want you to consider from Ram Dass. This is a guy who took a lot of LSD. But he also said, the resistance to the unpleasant situation is the root of suffering. An unsafe environment is an unpleasant situation. And our resistance to cope with it causes us more aggravation even than the hazards themselves. It distracts us. Own it, baby. Find out the problems with each task and resolve them and go from there. Okay. And the final step here is you take that original outline that you had of the steps of the task and you give instructional information for each one. You don't just say, put the caustic in the tank. You say, for the 78-gallon hot caustic vessel in the CIP cart, we use 4,000 milliliters of caustic. And it's this product. Check the SDS. And when you're pumping it, pump it cautiously and deliberately. And wear a face shield, and wear an apron, and wear the heavy-duty dark green nitrile gloves. Now, maybe your SOP previously said, put 4,000 mils of stuff in the thing. Now we're just going to add a few extra little tidbits in there, like what's the personal protective equipment, and a reminder to be deliberate and thoughtful when we're pumping the caustic. That's really what we've done, right? Now we've got a new procedure, and it's better than ever. And we use it for training, and we use it for consistency, and it contributes to quality in our operation. Okay? You can, forget OSHA for just a minute, and think about, I'm going to take a job that worries me, and we're going to do this live in a minute. I'm going to take a job that worries me, and then I'm going to revise my procedure for how to do it, and then I'm going to share the love with everybody I work with on the new, better, safer way. And, you know, oftentimes these things actually save time. I mean, you can get like me ultimately and be like, I'm like a safety preacher because I've seen what happens on the upside when people do it and they begin to have pride, more pride in their work than they had before. And they begin to have more caring for their coworker than they had before. And if your marketing department wants to pick up on it and, you know, promote it as, you know, we have this great safety culture, yeah, more power to you. Get down with that. All right. In the notes, which are all downloadable after the conference here, I've got a fully elucidated example for you of the caustic washing of a fermenter or a bright beer tank. And I break it down into 8 steps. Dup, dup, dup. See? Step 1, outline. These are the major steps. And then you can pick one thing and you can drill down and you can create some instructional detail. So to fill the CIP tank, add cool water to the left tank up to the overfill tube. That's instructional. Like, even if I've never done it, now I'm not saying you should, but even if I've never done it, I could follow this SOP and I could probably get the job done just right. Then I'm going to add hot water to an inch below the overfill tube of the hot tank side. And then I'm going to, somewhere here, I'm going to turn on the thermostat to heat it up from 140 to 170. And then I'm going to add my caustic, okay? Anyways, we're not going to go through this example. Instead, I thought what would be a little bit more fun is we'll just do one live. Because I don't want you to think this is canned. This is something you do every day. You can do it on the fly. All right, so reminder, here are the 4 steps. We're going to pick a task. We're going to do it collectively right now. Now we're going to identify the hazards, come up with some solutions to those hazards, and then we're going to revise our procedure. We won't actually write an SOP today, but I'm going to show you some really cool stuff that just hit the press. Identify the hazards. So the Brewers Association Safety Subcommittee came up with this nifty placard, and I think I've got enough for everybody here. If you come up afterwards and take 1 or 2 of these. These have little pictograms on here, and these pictograms are a good trigger. So you're looking at a job, and you go, okay, what could happen when I'm doing this with the forklift? Let's see. I could slip. I could hit somebody. I have motion hazards, so I have kinetic energy hazards. There are mechanical problems with the mast, you know, if I've got my hand in the wrong place. Those are kind of the things that I'm worried about with this forklift operation. And you can kind of use this as a reminder. This has like all the common brewery hazards in generic form. We have electrical pressure, slips and trips, confined space, that sort of stuff. So I encourage you to come up and get one of these afterwards. So we're going to use this as a kind of a cue sheet, and then we're going to specify some hazard controls, and here are the 4 kinds we just talked about. So let's do that, all right? I almost did it. You see, you almost stepped off the dock. All right? I have to set a good example. So look, I'm going to ask you right now, what's a job that happens, a task that happens in every brewery, regardless of size, that you are involved in that gives you the creeps? It gives you that safety uncomfortableness, that feeling of, I don't have my seatbelt on, I'm naked, right? Can you think of a job like that? Dry hopping from a ladder? Sound good? Okay, great. I know we shouldn't be doing it, but we all do it. All right, we're going to just make a little list here, and I'm going to give you resources to a form, a word template for this at the end of the talk today. You list the first steps. What's the first thing you do before you ever dry hop a fermenter? Find the right fermenter. Good one. Degas the fermenter, right? What happens if you don't? Any ideas? Right, the coin, right, that, you know, you've got a tri-clamp up on the dome of the tank. And where I'm from, we call those the coins, right, the little blank end in there. You know, there's a very unfortunate story that happened in Denver a couple years ago. Guy's working third shift by himself on top of a very tall fermenter. Takes off a 3-inch coin before he degassed the beer. The coin swept his jaw right off his face. He fell off the ladder and managed to reach his cell phone and call his boss in the nighttime. He couldn't even obviously speak. I don't want to get too gory about it. He lived, but the guy was a newlywed and a new kid and no jaw. Did anybody ever tell you when they taught you how to dry hop, do not ever, ever, ever open a fermenter until you've degassed it? Maybe not. I wouldn't take it for granted. Some of you kind of intuited that, no, I should depressurize the fermenter before I do that, but maybe not. Or maybe just one day, late at night, by yourself, you have a momentary lapse and you skip that step. Again, SOPs are beautiful, baby, because you've got it right there. Put it in plastic and slap it on the tank. Complacency is a killer. And, you know, distraction. Somebody could be thinking about, you know, I worked in the hazardous materials business before brewing. Much, much more scary stuff, really. And we had three guys holding a portable post-hole auger in the bottom of a 16-foot pit. And the pit, the air in the pit was filled with solvent vapor, so they were all wearing full-face respiratory equipment. And they were trying to drill a few feet more from the bottom of this pit to see how far the contamination went down. And it was a four-handled post-hole digger. Have you seen those with the motor and the four handles on it? They thought, well, we're going to go deep, so we're going to put an extension on the auger. So they made a piece of pipe. So the pipe comes out of the drive head of the machine and then to a 3-foot auger. Now they're holding the machine up like this, right? And they got two guys, the beefier guys are holding the machine up like this, and the third guy is steadying the auger because it's wobbling because they had this homemade extension. Well, guess what? His vision was pretty piss poor. And he didn't have eyeglasses fitted inside his respirator. You have to have special lenses for that. And so he's holding it, and he's wearing a leather glove, and the through bolt catches the cuff of the glove. And he can't get it off, and he can't really see what's going on. And so he's dancing around the auger, you know, like this, while the other two guys are holding it up overhead. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. All in a respirator. Whoa, 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 whoa. And the one guy reaches up to turn off the machine, but it's a rented machine. He doesn't know it. He's never used it before. He hits the throttle. That guy had 16 pieces of steel in his arm after that. Okay? And I did an interview with each of them, and I said, what do you think happened? And the one guy, one of the guys holding the machine told me, he said, well, you know, I'm having marital problems. That's all I was thinking about is what's my wife doing while I'm out here on the job. And the next guy goes, well, I was thinking, and this is independent, right? They're not in the same room. The one guy goes, honestly, I was thinking about working for another company. I was putting in my resume. I was thinking about that. And the third guy, the guy whose arm got blown up, he hadn't seen his parents for 2 years, and his parents were going to come to town for the holidays. And he was thinking about, you know, how's he going to entertain them while they're here? Nobody was on the job. Okay? So you've got to institutionalize these things. All right, so we're going to talk about dry hopping. We're going to find the right vessel. We're going to degas the vessel. I'm going to say for a minute that in our brewery, we climb a ladder to do this. Now, am I going to climb that ladder all by myself? All right, so here's how it goes. Normally, you do this by yourself. The other guy's on the brew house side, and you're in the packaging side, and you're going to do this. Well, you go, no, I got to go get him. I'm going to time the performance of my task to when he's between the 15 and the 30-minute hop edition so I can get him off the brew deck and come spot me. It's not rocket science. You just think about it. So we did this example recently at a state guild I was at, and afterwards a fellow comes up to me, sheepishly, said, "Everything you just talked about, it happened to me. I fell off the ladder. I came down, I broke my wrist. I was out for 6 weeks." And I said, "Well, you know, I'm glad it was only that. What about manway levers? Are they sticking out from your manway? You know, the different designs, right? Some of them are rods that stick out." He goes, "Yeah, we got those." And I go, "You know, if you came down on your skull on that, we wouldn't be having this conversation." So we put that ladder up there. We do it in, what do? Do we secure the ladder? Are we using a folding ladder? Or are we using an extension ladder? Or what kind of ladder are we using? Any idea? Right? A-frame ladders are not designed for use like that. I know we use them by leaning them up against things, but a step ladder is a step ladder. It's to be fully opened and have the levers locked down. Well, of course, we're going to solve the problem here in a minute, Larry. But for right now, we're going to find out how we're doing it wrong, right? We're using a step ladder or we're using an extension ladder, and we're putting this thing on maybe two tiny points of contact on a curved surface on an angled floor, which is slick with all kinds of other brewing activities that are going on, right? And there's nothing but chaos at the bottom of the ladder because the guy next to me is doing a bunch of packaging stuff and he's got hoses and everything all over the floor. And I degas the fermenter and I go up and I open up that top of the tank. And is there a way that I open it up that makes it a little safer just in case there's still some pressure in there? Yeah. Do I put my head right over it? I'm thoughtful about it. I go, okay, I think I'm good. Double checked it, zero PSI, nothing coming out of the Zwickel. CIP arm, I'm good. I take it off. But if there was somehow some pressure and it wasn't being read properly on a pressure dial, I'm not in the line of fire. One of the four, you know, common behaviors that lead to people getting injured is being in what we call the line of fire. And that could be you're in a forklift, between a forklift and a wall. It can be lots of different lines of fire. And then we take that coin off, and then I do whatever sanitation procedure I'm doing, and then I put the hops in, and do I dump them all in as fast as possible? If I want to be on YouTube, I do, right? No, I've learned that there's a thoughtful way to do that. I'm going to put a few hops in, give it about a minute, then I'm going to sprinkle the rest of them in. And I'm not going to overcharge my fermenter, right? Everybody likes to make 19 barrels on a 15-barrel system, right? Because we're saving labor and time, and that's all wonderful. Well, those same sort of decisions lead to kettle boil overs, which are very hazardous, and also lead to, you know, fermenters that don't have enough headspace in them, so when we dry hop, we get a gusher. And I've got my guy down below there spotting me on the ladder. Maybe I invested a little bit of extra money when I had my fermenters built, so I've got ladder hooks on there. Maybe I've got a way of securing it somehow with a bungee cord or a piece of rope or something. Again, OSHA doesn't say how you have to be safe. It says you have to be safe. It's up to you to figure out how. And I think that's an opportunity for some real cost-saving creativity. You can figure out how to do these things easily enough. All right, so what are some of the hazards we've identified? Well, there's a fall hazard. There's a pressure hazard. Any other major ones that you can think of we haven't talked about?
CO2,
thank you, sir. Right. You know, what, you know, you put stuff in the tank, something has to come out. And it's going to be coming out anyways. You know, and people think CO2 is denser than air. Well, as a matter of fact, it's only a little bit denser than air. And in any kind of turbulence, it's not going to be on the floor. It's going to be where you are as well. And so you get a little bit lightheaded, and you're on top of a ladder, precarious, sanitizer in one hand, some kind of a milk jug you figured out for pouring the hops in the other, and you're woozy. So, you know, look at this and say, well, that's the, you know, we can't afford a man lift or a scissor jack or something right now. We can't afford a catwalk, which would be, you know, catwalks are beautiful for this sort of thing, right? You lean down and do it, and you can't fall out. You got railings. It's brilliant, but it's expensive. And maybe you didn't put that in your budget when you built your brewery. So fair enough. I'm okay with that. What's, for your particular situation, what's your best way of dry hopping as safe as you can? And if it's from a ladder right now, I know you know it's not the best. Figure out the safest way to do what you've got to do. And then look at alternatives. Maybe you can't afford a hop cannon. Maybe you can't afford catwalks. But maybe you can go on Craigslist and you can find a used scissor lift. And go, well, there, you know, that was $4,000 I didn't expect to spend, but it's cheaper than my other alternatives, and we feel a whole lot better. By the way, we can change the light bulbs now. We can fix glycol valves. We can do all sorts of groovy stuff now that we have a scissor lift. So, you know, there's usually an upside here. See, I almost did it again. Old habits. So again, here's the idea. You know, now you've listed the steps, you've listed the hazards. List what you're going to do for controls. We're going to use this kind of ladder, only this ladder. It's never put on a wet floor. It's only put on a dry floor. That's like a safe work practice, right? No special equipment, just. And then we're going to figure out personal protective equipment. You know, maybe we've got a way to put a harness on and hook a lanyard up high, so that we can. You know, avoid the fall if it were to happen. Okay, here's where it gets really fun for you guys, and this is why these are new tools for busy brewers. The giving birth to a watermelon thing I mentioned earlier on, the safety subcommittee produces a lot of these best management practice guides. This one was really tough because we're trying to take this idea and holistically, you know, boil it down so that you've got some good guidance and it's not too heady. And so what we've done is we've created this document, which I'll show you a picture of in a moment. And in the document, or attached to the document, there are a couple of templates that Damon right here is responsible for creating that are Word documents. Download them, customize them, slap your logo on there. And here's the hazard assessment form. So here's the task, dry hopping. Dry hopping a 30-barrel fermenter, that's the task. Department, seller. The date that you did it and who wrote this. You're creating essential documentation. I told you, remember, I said forget OSHA. Just work to be safe, for starters. But in the process of working to be safe, if you can create some documentation, you're going to make your life a lot easier in your ultimate OSHA compliance. Step one, clear the area around the fermenter. Find the right fermenter. Step two, lean the ladder up against it. Step three, get your buddy who's going to stabilize the ladder while you climb up to put the strap on that holds it from sliding off the top of the fermenter, for example. Depressurize the fermenter. Go to the top of the ladder and remove this fixture and sanitize it. Dump the hops in slowly at first and then the rest. Right, step one, two, three, what am I doing at each step? And then what could go wrong at each of these things? Once you've identified what can go wrong, like I could slip and fall off the ladder, what kind of controls do I want to use? Well, I want to secure the ladder. I want to have somebody hold it. Maybe I want to have it chained off or tied to something. Maybe I want to have overhead fall protection. Again, I'm not here to tell you what that solution is. It could be whatever works for you. And then whether PPE is necessary. This FMEA number is a really great way to sort of pimp your SOP, pimp your hazard assessment, if you will. And that's a numerical ranking that we show you in our document how to do. And that numerical ranking gives you a number for each hazard. And the higher the number, the more you should be figuring out the solution to that hazard. And this is failure modes and effects analysis is what that stands for. It's not very sexy. But But the idea is you're going to rank the severity of the hazard, the likelihood of it occurring, and these are just numbers from 1 to 5, and then last, the detectability of the hazard. Is this like comes out of the blue, you never know when it's going to happen, like a lightning strike? Or is this something like, I'm climbing on a ladder, there's a likelihood I'm going to fall. That's a likelihood of 1, okay? I mean, there's no mystery here, right? Getting hit by a bolt of lightning while I'm on top of the ladder, that would be very hard to detect and very rare. And then secondly, we have an SOP form for you. So if you don't have SOPs in your brewery operation right now, we've got an example and we've got a template for you. And you can just, that's great, Larry, thanks, we're almost done. And you can plug and chug, you know, put your own name in here. This SOP describes Brewery X's dry hopping procedures for safe and effective dry hopping. Boom, okay? You're creating great documentation, you're creating great consistency for the long-range quality of your operation. Here's how we do this. This is the landing page that's on brewersassociation.org right now. The picture changes, but you get the idea. Go to brewersassociation.org and see this on the nav bar right here, the upper left, best practices. You click that. And when you click that, this panel comes up. And everything you see on the left here, these are safety resources that are free, accessible, no access requirements, you don't have to be a BA member, and they're right there for you. Brewersassociation.org, click best practices. You're up here, and then you find hazard assessment principles under brewery safety. This is the document I want to tell you about, and then we're going to take a few questions if we have any. All right, here's what it looks like. Brand new document, hot off the press, hazard assessment principles. It's got the forms. It's got examples. It's got the numerical ranking system if you want to go on the deep dive. All of that stuff right there for you. And that's what I've got. And I hope you're encouraged to take a sort of, be a little bit more comfortable when you're thinking about safety in the workplace. It's not all dogmatic, you know, written plans and procedures. Sometimes it's just using common sense and looking at a task and saying, what are the hazards, and how am I going to defeat those hazards with my budget and my equipment and my staff, right? You can print your safety plan on pink paper. OSHA doesn't say. What they say is the employer will make a safe workplace, and the employees will do as instructed in regards to safety. That's the core right there, guys. I hope this has been helpful for you, and I hope you go back to your breweries and really put this into effect. If you have a question, we've got time for just one or two. There's a mic up here in the front, and because we're being recorded, we ask you to speak to the mic.
Is it on? I'll do a really quick one. I sure appreciate it. I'm not sure if the BA already offers something like this, but the American Alpine guys do a yearly accident review with, you know, a lot of gory detail. And, you know, straight out of just the morbid curiosity of looking at him, you learn a lot. It would be interesting. I mean, your story about a guy blowing his jaw off because he's dry hopping a tank is quite an eye-opener for most of us. So,
you want me to talk about the survey?
Thanks. Yeah. Well, you know, there are two things I'd say about that. One is that every year the Bureau of Labor Statistics summarizes the previous year's accident and injury rate, and it's by industry. So we've been able to track the brewing industry's success record as a whole. Secondly, OSHA has what they call their top 10 list. If you look on this on the internet, just do OSHA's top 10, 2017. That would be the most current one. And you don't want construction, you want what's called general industry. Brewing falls into, you know, manufacturing is general industry. And you will see that the top 10 are all issues that every brewery faces. Like, we're right in the middle of it. We're, you know, we've got slips, trips, and falls. We've got hazard communication issues. We've got lack of SDSs. We've got occupational noise. You know, we have all the stuff. So the OSHA top 10 list is a good way. It's not as granular as what you're saying, you know, where you can find a specific individual. Lastly, I would say that we've got a very important initiative coming out of the Safety Subcommittee this year, in that a statistical population of brewers in the BA are going to receive a questionnaire and even a follow-up phone call, like, we really want the answers. And we're going to get some more granular information from that. Because what we want to know in serving the membership of the BA, what do you guys, you know, what hazards are you facing? We only know anecdotally, right? People come up to me after a talk, I call it safety confessional. You know, yeah, I fell off a tank, I broke my wrist, you know. He doesn't want that advertised. But I take that information and we recycle it to our colleagues and, you know, we know that it's out there. So those are all different ways of finding out what our actual issues are. Please go ahead, Larry.
I would encourage you, if it's going to come from a university in Colorado, if you reached out to about this, please be honest and please fill out the survey. We're going to try to figure out how to bring resources to bear to help you solve these problems. So be forthcoming as you can. Individual breweries will receive anonymity, but we feel it's really important that we find out that very specific information. And we're spending quite a bit of money to make it happen. So your resources at work, please be engaged.
I think you might even get some kind of a Best Buy card or something when you're done. So, I mean, we'll incentivize it in one way or another for you. That's what we're hoping to do. So, any other questions, folks? Listen, go out and make it a safe year. Please do.
Thank you to Matt Stinchfield. Have a great afternoon.